Hey, radio listeners. Bored with bland, clear channel brand programming?
The requirement for dependable internet services.
The World Trade Center site.
Innovative electronically choreographed score to a spectacular aerial fireworks show.
Can't handle commercials?
I love the 80s.
Tired of repetitive radio?
World Trade Center.
There's always Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Or
Freedom Tower, as it will be called, will be the tallest skyscraper in the world when it is completed. And it will stand where the twin towers of the World Trade Center stood.
Turn off the radio! Turn off that bullshit!
Unlicensed, non-commercial, pirate radio for the Santa Cruz community and for the global community.
So real that the radio will never play it, but that's cool. The enemy's supposed to hate it.
What's on the radio? Propaganda, mind control, and turning it on. It's like putting on the blindfold. Cause when you bring in the real, you don't get rotation. Let you take over the station. And yeah, I know it's part of their plans to make us think it's all about party and dancing.
I see some enemies. We'd be fooling ourselves if we had an audience this large and didn't realize that there were some enemies present.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, free speech, freedom of the press, freedom of information, free radio.
And up next on the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org, it's the Independence Day. Yay! Not for the Indians, not for the blacks, not for women, not for poor people. But hey, for at least some Boston merchants and lots of slave owners. Independence Day, July 4th, 2019. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So to begin with, I'm going to read you a little bit from Wikipedia on what is known as the Somerset case, or Somerset versus Stuart, a 1772 case from the Court of King's Bench up in merry old England. And the reason I'm going to read this has to do with something I kind of learned about 10 years ago reading some books around the origins of the American Revolution. It traditionally, in what I learned in high school, was that the American Revolution was a great and meaningful and inspiring rebellion against British imperialism that has had echoes all over the world, ironically, as the Americans have become the new imperialists. But in terms of the spirit and sentiment of the original American Revolution, that it was a genuine a cry for freedom, albeit somewhat marred by the fact that slavery was later put directly into the Constitution, though not by that name, and endured in a chattel form for about, 60 or 70 more years, and then actually 80 more years, something like that, until the Civil War, and then another 100 years under Jim Crow, and still endures in terms of the massive disparities in prison populations and the percentage of African Americans who have criminal records, those who are proportionately shot down dead by police compared to white individuals in the same categories and so forth. In other words, it ain't ended, and it's gone on. But the Somerset decision, well, has to do with a decision in England. It held that chattel slavery was unsupported by the common law in England and Wales, although the position elsewhere in the British Empire was left ambiguous. Lord Mansfield decided that, and I'm quoting, "The state of slavery is of such a nature that it is incapable of being introduced on any reasons, moral or political, but only by positive law, that is, by statute, which preserves its force long after the reasons, occasions, and time itself from whence it was created is erased from memory. It is so odious that nothing can be suffered to support it but positive law." In other words, if the legislature decides slavery is okay, as they did in the United States, that's just fine. But unless that happens in Britain, slavery is out. "Whatever inconveniences, therefore, may follow from the decision," namely deciding that simply common law, sort of the traditional unwritten law, does not allow slavery, "I cannot say this case is allowed or approved by the law of England, and therefore the black must be discharged." Slavery had never been authorized by statute in England and Wales, and Lord Mansfield's decision found it also unsupported in common law. Lord Mansfield narrowly limited his decision to the issue of whether a person, regardless of being a slave, could be removed from England against their will, and said they could not. Even this reading meant that certain property rights in chattel slaves were unsupported by common law. It is one of the most significant milestones in the abolitionist campaign. Some historians believe the case contributed, and this is my point, to increasing colonial support for separatism in the 13 colonies. That's separatism, in other words, independence. Hence, just being talked about on July 4th, Independence Day, by parties on both sides of the slavery question who wanted to establish independent government and law. The southern colonies wanted to protect slavery and expanded their territory dramatically in the decades after independence was won. James Somerset, an enslaved African, was purchased by Charles Stewart, a customs officer, when he was in Boston, province of Massachusetts Bay, a British crown colony in North America. Stewart brought Somerset with him when he returned to England in 1769, but in 1771, Somerset escaped. After he was recaptured in November, Stewart had him imprisoned on the ship Anne and Mary under Captain John Knowles, bound for the British colony of Jamaica. He directed that Somerset be sold to a plantation for labor. Somerset's three godparents from his baptism as a Christian in England, John Marlowe, Thomas Walken, and Elizabeth Cade, made an application on the 3rd of December before the Court of King's Bench for a writ of habeas corpus. Captain Knowles, on the 9th of December, produced Somerset before the Court of the King's Bench. Habeas corpus means you have to bring, literally it means show me the body, or give me the body, or here's the body. You bring the person before the court to say what he's charged with. You can't hold him without a charge. Captain Knowles, on the 9th of December, produced Somerset before the King's Bench, which had to determine whether his imprisonment was lawful. The Chief Justice of the King's Bench, William Murray, 1st Earl of Mansfield, ordered a hearing for the 21st of January. In the meantime, he set the prisoner free on recognizance. A request to prepare arguments was granted Somerset's counsel, and so it was not until the 7th of February, 1772, that the case was heard. In the meantime, the case had attracted a great deal of attention in the press, and members of the public donated monies to support the lawyers for both sides of the appeal. Granville Sharp, an abolitionist layman who continually sought test cases against the legal justifications for slavery, was Somerset's real backer. "The state of slavery is of such a nature that it is incapable now of being introduced by courts of justice upon mere reasoning or inferences from any principles, natural or political. It must take its rise from positive law, that is to say, from existing ordinance, statutes, and laws that have already been passed by the Parliament. The origin of it can in no country or age be traced back to any other source. Immemorial usage preserves the memory of positive law long after all traces of the occasion. reason, authority, and time of its introduction are lost. And in a case so odious as the condition of slaves must be taken strictly, the power claimed by this return was never in use here. No master ever was allowed here to take a slave by force to be sold abroad because he had deserted from his service or for any other reason whatever. We cannot say the cause set forth by this return is allowed or approved by the kingdom's, by the laws of this kingdom. Therefore, the black must be discharged. Legal academics have argued for years over precisely what legal precedent was set in this case. Differences in the reports of the judgment make it hard to determine just how far Lord Mansfield went in acknowledging the broader issues behind his deliberately narrow ruling. The Somerset decision, even if limited to prohibiting the forcible removal of slaves from England, established a radical precedent. It went against recent common law authority, whose decisions had stated that slaves were items of property who were not emancipated either becoming Christian or by entry into England, that possession of them could be recovered by the legal action, and that their master might lawfully compel them to leave England with them. And so that was overturned by this decision. The precedent established by Somerset's case was seen to have wider implications. While Somerset's case provided a boon to the abolitionist movement and disapproved the holding of slaves in England, it did not end British participation in the slave trade or slavery in other parts of the British Empire where colonies had established slave laws. Despite the ruling, escaped slaves continued to be illegally recaptured in England. Just a year after the Somerset ruling, there was a newspaper report of a runaway being recaptured and committing suicide in England. In addition, contemporary newspaper advertisements show that slaves continued to be illegally bought and sold in the British Isles. It was not until 1807 that Parliament decided to suppress the slave trade, not only outlawing the practice by British subjects, but also seeking to suppress the trade by foreigners. Although the slave trade was suppressed, slavery continued to exist in various parts of the British Empire until it was abolished by the Slavery Abolition Act of 1833. Of course, in the U.S., it wasn't abolished until the Civil War and the 13th Amendment ended it in 1865. However, the influence in Great Britain and the colonies, it became a significant part of the common law of slavery in the English-speaking world, helped launch abolitionism. And there was a case in Scotland that apparently followed. 13 colonies in the United States, which is why I originally brought this up. The Somerset case was reported in detail by the American Colonial Press. In Massachusetts, several slaves filed freedom suits in 1773 and 1774, 2 years before, 3 years before the American Revolution broke out, based on Mansfield's ruling. These were supported by the colony's General Court for Freedom of the Slaves, but vetoed by successive royal governors. As a result, some individuals in pro-slavery and anti-slavery colonies, for opposite reasons, desired a distinct break from English law in order to achieve their goals with regard to slavery. In other words, if the royal governor had vetoed the right of the slave based on the Somerset decision to be free, the anti-slavery people wanted that independence so that that governor could be thrown out. However, in the colonies in the South, there was concern that this could lead to the Somerset decision could lead to rulings by the governors at some point of the colonies that, like England, slavery could not be permitted as a right without some specific law in the legislature. Well, that shouldn't have been too hard to get, considering there were no slaves who could, well, there were very few blacks who were allowed to vote, if any, and even fewer ordinary individuals. It was power was in the hands of the slave owners in the southern states. However, historians Alfred W. and Ruth G. Blumrosen suggest that the case increased support of the southern colonies for independence as they particularly wanted to protect slavery, and that has led me to essentially describe the American Revolution as a revolutionary movement to defend slavery, particularly considering its ultimate outcome, which was in the constitutional protection of slavery for another 70 years. And there's more on that. I suggest people might want to look it up in the Wikipedia to hear more. In the meantime, however, we're going to take a musical break and turn to a more local forms of abuse against poor people. It isn't quite slavery, but people are rounded up without just cause, denied basic rights like the right to sleep without harassment at night, and their property taken from them willfully and arbitrarily by so-called officers of the law. Yeah, you got it. That's what homeless people face in Santa Cruz.
I was there in the winter of 64 when we camped in the ice at Nashville's door. 300 miles our trail had led. We barely had time to bury our dead. When the Yankees charged and the colors fell, Overton Hill was a living hell. When we called retreat, it was almost dark. I died with a grape shot in my heart. Say a prayer for peace for every fallen son.
Prayer for peace, for peace, for our God. so tired, but we can't come home.
No, we can't go home till the last show is
fired. And that was Till the Last Shot's Fired by Trace Adkins. And I'm going to go now to Salinas, where tomorrow apparently a sweep of, I think, is it called Sherwood Park? We'll find out shortly, hopefully with a quick call to Wes White up there, who are down there or over there, who's going to be monitoring and documenting and perhaps leading protests against this latest attack on homeless people under the forthcoming broader attack that's slated for July 10th. And I'm going to read this warning notification that apparently is being posted in areas where homeless people are sleeping. Currently, apparently, they're allowed to sleep in parks at night, but have to pick up and leave and carry their stuff with them during the day wherever they happen to be. And they are provided with, well, I'll read you what this law says. This is, of course, an attempt to get around the Boise versus Martin decision, which was a federal court decision in Boise, Idaho in September, which regular listeners know all about. But it has to do with the fact that you can't arrest someone for sleeping outside, camping, as they like to call it in their quaint phraseology in these cities, masking their anti-homeless actions and rhetoric, unless you have a real and reasonable shelter for them. And that means for everyone, not just for a token few, or you put aside one bed so you can use that bed to kind of say, see, we're going to arrest you unless you move along and hide out somewhere else, pack up all your stuff, maybe lose some of it because you have to move and you haven't got enough time and energy and another place to take it to, as was the case, for example, with a lot of people in the Ross camp when they were forced to move without adequate shelter at the beginning of May of this year. Anyway, this notification, which was posted, it reads as follows. Salinas Municipal Code Section 2814 prohibits persons occupying a public park or recreation area between dusk and daylight of the following morning, including the prohibition of camping and lodging. And that's a sort of a legalistic way of using sort of sweeping terms, which means you can't lie down in a park after dark in Salinas. We have the same laws here in Santa Cruz, but over at least one winter, 2017-2018, then Parks and Rec boss Garcia suspended the laws, but the new Parks and Rec boss, Tony Elliott, has not suspended the laws over the last winter, and that has often been, some of us are concerned, the pretext for giving people citations, requiring them to pay large amounts of money, confiscating their property, moving them along, giving them no safe place to go, all the while maintaining falsely that they're following the court decision, which says we're not harassing people for sleeping who have no other option, when in fact that's exactly what they're doing, Chief Mills' statements to the contrary notwithstanding. Anyway, continuing to read this morning notice that's being posted in Salinas by the Salinas Police. Effective July 10th, 2019, the city shall initiate strict enforcement of Section 2814 within its parks and recreation areas to include citation, prosecution, and impoundment of property. Campers will be provided assistance in advance for 4 weeks prior to July 10th, 2019. Any person presently camping or lodging in a park or recreation area shall have the opportunity to store any excess property for a period of up to 90 days. City staff shall make storage bins available in Sherwood Park every Tuesday and Thursday between the hours of 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. from June 6, 2019 through July 10, 2019. So it's actually, this is the ending of that period in the next week. What this, of course, says is that you can only take with you what you can carry. The rest of the stuff you have to leave with this so-called storage facility, which is only open 4 hours a week to reclaim the property you might need. And I don't know. I haven't heard any reports from the Salinas folks and advocates as to whether this actually is a safe place to put stuff. I know that when similar facilities were opened up in response to a successful $2.3 million lawsuit in Fresno way back in 2007, which the homeless won, storage facilities were essentially ruined the material that they stored. It was leaking, it was inadequate storage, and people lost stuff that they stored. But, you know, maybe Salinas is doing better because they're more humanitarian. Times have changed. They don't want to be sued again. Who knows? Anyway, continuing with this warning notice, our city and staff members of the Continuum of Care, I used to call it the Continuum of Carelessness, will be available to sign up persons presently camping, including immediate application for housing in the Moongate Plaza, and to review emergency housing options available that day. Notice the clever phraseology, or the careful phraseology. You can sign up to apply for housing, and you can review emergency options open. It doesn't say how many options are open or how likely it is you're going to get into housing. We have a similar situation here in Santa Cruz, of course, with the smooth talk of Susie O'Hara, the assistant city manager here in Santa Cruz, who oversaw the destruction of the Ross Camp and continues to give these smiley presentations to the city council and to various subcommittees, essentially putting forward the false narrative that there is adequate shelter for people, but that really the only problem is people who just don't want to follow rules. There's lots of space, so what are we worried about? Or we're working very hard. We anticipate there will be more space soon, so there's no cause for alarm. Continuing with the Salinas notification, however, again, the reason I'm reading it is because I received a call from activist Wes White this morning that the police are intending a sweep in this Sherwood Park area tomorrow morning, Friday, July 5th, and he was calling for people to come with video, to come with any kind of documentation material to witness and to essentially try to deter police misconduct through the presence of neutral, or should we say, justice-loving observers. Anyway, this notice continues. The Salinas Municipal Code allows persons to camp in the public right-of-way, that's the sidewalk, subject to the limited restrictions set forth therein between the hours of 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. So we're not going to let you in the parks at night anymore, but you can go sleep on the sidewalk. Those persons lacking any other shelter shall be permitted to sleep in the public right-of-way during those hours. Unless, of course, they're accused of blocking the sidewalk or, I don't know, violating some special signage that was put up in some area to deter that area from having anybody sleeping there. It also says all personal property remaining within a city park after the posted closing time shall be immediately removed without further notice pursuant to Section 16130.030 of the Salinas Municipal Code. Questions may be directed to the Salinas Police Department at 758-7090. You can always give the police chief a call, give her a call and let her know what you think of this fine policy. Let's see if we can find out what Wes White thinks about this fine policy. And we'll give him a call and see what he has to say. All right, so I have Wes on the line. Hi, Wes.
Hello.
And we spoke earlier, of course, about the crisis situation for homeless folks in Salinas. You've been covering this for some time. You've been, setting up alternate campgrounds, leading homeless folks, fighting RV removal, helping to organize the statewide union of the homeless, the California Homeless Union. And what's going on? Acquaint us. I've already read the warning notice that you sent me by email earlier, but how many folks are out there? How does this impact them? And what do you see is going on?
So over at Sherwood Park in Salinas, there's a rodeo that happens once a year, and so they posted these notices. There's about maybe 4 dozen people, 50 people. Out there, and you know, a lot of them have been there over a decade already. So, I mean, they've gone through these cycles of where, you know, they've been told they have allowed to leave. Strict enforcement or, you know, get a citation or arrest. The last couple of years hasn't really been like that, but this year is strict enforcement. So, you know, people are getting chased out of the park, so they're across the street. They have other stuff. They moved out the night before, you know, or the morning of, well before anybody ever shows up, the Smith and Enright or the police. And so their stuff should be safe. It's across the street. It's not on the property. It's not even on the sidewalk adjacent to the property. It is across the street in somebody else's private property that they have permission for. And yet still the police come and take their stuff from there.
Now, let me ask you about this, Wes, because I know this policy is due to intensify on July 10th, according to this notice, and I guess you've talked about the arrival of this new ordinance is going to go into effect, too, that essentially drives people out of the parks even at night. Currently, they're allowed to be in the parks at night, correct?
Yes. And this is actually for all parks, even though it's only for Sherwood Park where they're posting it. And I guess we need to gather up some evidence at other parks to prove that there's no signage there and select enforcement. So 2814, and then they're going to use 16.130 and 140, laws. So
what are those laws?
It's legal.
What are those laws? What are those laws? Sorry, Wes. What are those laws?
It's unlawful camping. Everything like being to and a tent or just having property. All of it. That's what they want to enforce is the 16.130 and 140.
So you say this. I know in Chinatown we have heard that there's a shutdown of social services. I think you talked to me about this earlier. That's a place where it's near the city hall and near where you had the flagpole community for a while, where people could camp during the day as a protest outside city hall. But then that was removed by legislation. And then we've talked to you about the sweeps along Soledad Avenue, which is Chinatown, right next to Dorothy's Place, and facilities that are now being closed down. Is there a general crackdown on homeless people throughout Salinas in spite of this Martin versus Boise decision?
Of course.
Tell me about it.
They do have constant sweeps. I mean, they spend millions of dollars on themselves just to keep people back, steal their stuff, and set people up for failure. So there are sweeps all the time. They post them. I've tried to get on this email notice, but I've been unsuccessful so far. It's facilitated by the city, and they post as soon as they are aware, and it's within whatever the 3 days and such. Whenever they're going to post, they also send an email to, you know, all the service providers and everything, whoever asks for one.
Now, did the service providers make any response to this? I mean, do they rush out and say, wait, we wonderful shelter for you. Here's some more, here's food and clothing, you know, and, I don't know, hot toddies. Is there any response by service providers?
To this point, absolutely not. I've made that same argument a few times, and of course, it's never attended to. It's never to be, discussed. That's outside their scope. That's not what they got directly paid for. To do field outreach, that's not what they get paid for. Theirs is a desk job. You need to come to them. That's the only way case management works. Maybe they'll do it every so often, but on a perpetual basis, on a habit-forming basis, no.
Now, what about this storage situation? I was already talking earlier, before I contacted you, about how there were promises to store stuff. In fact, the requirements under state law that abandoned or missing or confiscated property, even if it's not being held for a court case, be held for at least 90 days. And in Fresno, when this was done, the property, much of it or some of it or a significant portion of it, was destroyed by being left in, areas that were leaky facilities. Have you visited any of these storage facilities? Have any homeless folks left their property to be stored? How far away is the storage facility? What's the story with that?
The last I know, it is on which would be closer to John Street and Worth Street, not a very advantageous. And plus, they're only open, quote, for like 2 hours a week or something, or 2 hours every other week.
4 hours a week, but not, it's 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. according to their posting on two Thursdays, I think Tuesdays and Thursdays, or Mondays and Tuesdays, or some such thing.
Right. So it's limited, and, they're never really that fast at it anyway. It's certainly not a priority for them. They typically won't let anybody in there, from last I remember. So you're not really able to see how they're treating the rest of the band.
Has anyone from the California Homeless Union attempted, as you may remember we did with the campground, the River Street campground, to essentially confront the authorities, determine policies, at least with respect to storage? In other words, have union members demanded authorities allow them to inspect the premises, maybe having a ringer get their property taken and then asked to go see it?
Right. That's a great suggestion. There are people with stuff. And, of course, everyone's in a major state of crisis, even getting focused to do these declarations for, an injunction against the city for TRO, it has been hard to do.
Now, talk a little bit about that, because I know you've kind of taken some inspiration from the Ross Camp activities here in Santa Cruz, and Attorney Anthony Prince has held, you were telling me this morning, a workshop encouraging people to create declarations showing that they would be in imminent harm once these sweeps begin, I guess it's, or continue, tomorrow. I mean, they happened a week ago as well, and I guess they'll intensify on the 10th, is that right?
Correct. Sometimes they even do it twice a week. They've been consistently doing it for once a week, even though this is our union chapter is at Sherwood Park. And they're very well disciplined. They're very meticulous and, thoughtful about landscaping and such. They even sweep dirt. So, just to make it look uniform. So they're very careful. I mean, you only see a tent and nothing else unless they got a project going on, but not trash, so they're very careful about that. And even trying to demand that the bathrooms be open when they're supposed to be open, not let alone have them be 24 hours. Because there are an awful lot of women there. The imminent harm is, if you're not around people you know and trust and can watch your stuff for you while you're gone, or have your back, especially ladies, there's nowhere for ladies to be at all. So, sexual assault is certainly on a lot of people's mind. And not being able to be here, there, or anywhere. How are you supposed to stay together and get each other's back?
Well, I know that you attended a Washington conference of sort of poor people's campaign / Union of the Homeless reconstitution, and then you've videoed and posted, thank you, a presentation and report that we had here last Wednesday, I guess it was a week ago Wednesday, in Santa Cruz at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Is there any local presence of the California Homeless Union other than you as an individual? How many people have joined? Are you having regular meetings? What's cooking with that?
So our union chapter, a lot of people have had shirts, and of course they spin them. Hardly anybody holds on to anything for very long. But some people still have their union shirts. We've probably given out closer to 3 dozen of them, and people wear them. Especially on sweep days, because it does make them feel a little bit, more confident about themselves. And of course, they still scurry and run, but they stick up for themselves better. Sweep is a very conservative area, and it's hard. Fight or flight is a pretty big sticking point. So you go, and you go across the street, you try to comply with these people, and then what happens? Oh, you can't be here either. Oh, take everything out the cart. Now that everything's on the ground, you took out the cart, we're taking everything you got. It's ridiculous. It's just theft. Nothing but theft.
So, how have the media been with respect to this? I know, to some extent, you've been able on some occasions to get some media covering this. Has that been the case with these sweeps?
Uh, the Californian did come out and they did an article. I've not been able to see it because I don't have a subscription for it. So I'm still trying to figure out, but I've heard it still has a slant, you know what I mean? And even as good as any writer's going to be, still has to go through the editor and the publisher, and, you know, they already have their gaslighting going on already, you know, their propaganda spin.
Mm-hmm.
So from what I hear, it didn't really cover it, you know, from the people in the parks perspective.
So you put out a call to me this morning suggesting, you know, if anybody from Santa Cruz can come over at 7 a.m. in the morning, of which I kind of went, yeah, right. You know, I mean, because you're looking for essentially some support from fellow members of the California Homeless Union and just interested people generally to address these sweeps, if not tomorrow morning, then I guess the beginning of the more systematic sweeps starting on July 10th. You want to talk about that at all?
Yes. So tomorrow morning will be another Friday sweep. I mean, they can pay billions of dollars to do what? I mean, you know, kick people around like a soccer ball and steal everything they got and get paid for it, you know, very well, and especially the attitude. But this Friday, they're the only people on the list at Shore Park. So 7 o'clock in the morning, they're very prompt. Sometimes they come even earlier. The bathroom is never open. And we need at least two dozen people with cameras, you know, so we can go one-on-one with these people, maybe even, you know, two-on-one with some of them. You know, follow the crew and follow the police and document what they tell people. There's no reason to interject or hurl insults at them or anything. Just legally observe, which means we're observing, we're not interfering, we're not talking, you know. And I've done that plenty of times, and I cackled at them a little bit ago, so of course they'll be a little bit more on edge. But if there is a lot of people, you know, a lot of watchful eyes, especially with recording devices, then I think it may quell their attitude and their behavior, maybe even get them to run away. You know, which would be awesome. But, you know, because what they're doing is so wrong, and they know it's wrong, because what they tell people is the same bullshit we always hear. Oh, not my problem. Well, you just got to get out of here. You know, anything, everything. No, you leave that. That's mine now. You know, I mean, seriously, dude. They're obviously good. Why don't you get a job? I mean.
Yeah. It sounds familiar. In the past, you know, I've heard of these sweeps happening around Soledad and Chinatown some years ago. And at Dorothy's place, the management woman there said, they come and sweep, but it's kind of like almost like a dance. They announce they're coming, people pick up their stuff and leave, and Dorothy's place helps them out. And then they come back when the sweep is over and they put their stuff back down again, and they're generally left alone for another 3 months. But you don't think that is, first of all, is that an accurate rendition of what actually was happening on Soledad Street in Chinatown? And B, is that what's likely to happen here with these sweeps?
So on the A, I'd say that was accurate maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Now they're much more regular because the city is no longer liable or responsible. They just now Smith and Enright contracted out for cheaper rate, not union pay, not union protection. And so that's why they do it more often, because, you know, you can spend the same amount of money on cheaper people. And there's A, and the B is this is imminent, and there's no way they're coming back. As far as I understand, this is not a temporary thing just for the Rodeo, and then it's cool to come back. No, they're very clear every time they come out. That, you know, why don't you go right outside of city limits, then you won't be a problem anymore. You know, I mean, they tell people stupid shit that's so unprofessional and so wrong and so illegal. You know, I mean, they should be in jail, dude. They should be fired and, you know, in jail. Absolutely in jail.
Sounds familiar. And you actually, I was looking at your hour and 20-minute video on this. And by the way, the more commentary you put on it, the better, as far as I'm concerned, as I think I've told you in the past. But it's interesting. You have various interviews. You have video of an earlier sweep happening. And people can find this, if I understand it, on YouTube at John Doe 13K, and it'll be under what title?
Just type in Sherwood Park, and it'll come up.
Okay.
Because there's multiple. I can't remember exactly what it is.
But there's a series of your videos there from different shoots that you've done, including Santa Cruz, Salinas, and other places. I'm gonna wind this up, but let me give you the last word and tell you that even though my ass is in bed, my heart is with you in Salinas.
Okay. Well, and July 10 will be next Wednesday. That's when we need our legal observers coming more than tomorrow, because tomorrow is more routine. But the July 10 thing is about citations and arrests, which is totally unconstitutional in Martin versus Boise. And that's where we need the from every angle, because you just don't know what these people are capable of until they do it. From the conceptual training of what's legal and right to the actual teaching of it in a classroom setting for their training, and then the morning briefing, and then in the field somewhere there's a breakdown, and I would imagine it's closer to the top than the bottom.
So where can people find out the exact location to go to for this? And is there a phone contact people you can give out for folks who want more information, or a website to go to?
So Shore Park is in Salinas. It's on 940 North Main Street. And you can contact Wes White, Salinas Homeless Union President, 510-274-9275.
That's Sherwood Park, and again, the address on Main Street is?
940.
And your phone number again is?
510-274-9275. And we definitely need some legal observers for Wednesday morning at 7 a.m. Please come.
That'll be on July 10th. And we'll probably be getting back to you on Sunday for an update on how things went tomorrow on July 5th. You might be sending me some more details. I think that I was you've already given us a lot of details, but if you want to send more, I'll put them out. And thank you, Wes, for being on the scene, even as grim a scene as it is.
Yeah, well, people are dying out here, and that's absolutely what I'm worried about the most is, hearing about more people passing. People do need housing, and I think the best start is through the policy of stopping the molestation and the theft of, people too poor to afford rent.
Hear, hear. Hey, thank you, and get back to me if you've got more breaking news, and we'll break it here, and we'll see what happens.
All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Bye-bye. And that was, of course, Wes White, Santa Cruz, Monterey County Homeless Advocates, and also the Salinas Homeless, California Homeless Union. So before the music of this musical break, I'm going to read you some of the lyrics. It's called What's Left of the Flag. It's by a group called Flogging Molly. And here's the lyrics. You can actually hear them in the song, but maybe a little hard for some folks to hear. His eyes, they closed, and his last breath spoke. He had seen all to be seen, a life once full, now an empty vase, wilt the blossoms on his early grave. Walk away, me boys, walk away, me boys, and by morning we'll be free. Wipe that golden tear from your mother dear, and raise what's left of the flag for me. Then the rosary beads, count them, 1, 2, 3, fell apart as they hit the floor. In a garb of black, we must pay respect to the color we were born to mourn. Walk away, me boys, walk away, me boys, and by morning we'll be free. Wipe that golden tear from your mother dear, and raise what's left of the flag for me. In its place grew an angry, festered wound, full of hatred and remorse, where I pick and scratch till the blood it matched silent rage that now fills my lungs. For there are many ways to kill a man, they say, with a bayonet, axe, or sword. But, son, a bullet fired from a shapeless guise just put the shell of a Thompson gun. And then the Walk Away Me Boys chorus.
from the east out to the western shore, where many men and many more will fall, but no angel flies with me tonight, though freedom reigns on all. And curse the name for which we slaved our day, so every man chose kingdom come, and sure as night turns day.
Red smoke, he had seen all to be.
Hang on, let me make sure we don't. Well, so that's pretty much mostly what it is. Let's see if there's anything more that I want to pass on to you. I think that's pretty much it. Let's see here. Let's see here. The last part of the song, which I didn't read. But as night turns day, it's the passion play. Oh, my God, what have they done? With madman's rage, well, they dug our graves. But the dead rise again, you fools. The Walk Away Me chorus ends the song, Walk Away Me Boy, Walk Away Me Boys. And here's Flogging Molly, What's Left of the Flag.
His eyes, they closed, and his last breath spoke. He had seen all to be seen. A life once full, now an empty vase, with the blossoms on his early grave. Walk away, me boy, walk away, me boy, and by morning we'll be free. Wipe that golden tear from your mother dear, and raise what's left of the flag for me. Then the rosary beads, count them, 1, 2, 3, fell apart as they hit the floor. In our garb of black, we must pay respect to the colour we're born to mourn. Walk away, me boys, walk away, me boys, by morning we'll be free. Wipe the golden tear from your mother dear, raise what's left of the flag for me.
That's certainly some of Flogging Molly's What's Left of the Flag. And you got the lyrics, and I think you got the gist of the tune. You're tuned, in the meantime, to the stream of free radio at freakradio.org. We are still trying to lure you with our $300 reward in case you want to give us a tip for a studio for a year, at which point we'll pay for the studio space, 10 by 10, access to internet, access to electricity, access to a bathroom. Kind of a problem for those of us in Santa Cruz, particularly if you want to use the Loudon Nelson bathrooms and you aren't on their patron list, so to speak. In any case, you can get in touch with us if you have any thoughts about this, and you might, well, you know, $300 could come in handy. And we still got it available for you. 423-4833 is my number. I'm a member of the collective. I'll pass on your information, and we will hopefully find a place. So do it, and you may be a little richer for it. We're also looking for a transmitter site. That's a tree or a second story of a house, hopefully maybe even a five-story. I mean, hey, got an Empire State Building, we can put it on. Any tall building or even a two-story building would be helpful to put up the transmitter, the antenna, I should say, that will enable us to actually go back on the air. We have been streaming now at least a couple of months, and it's really been unfortunate. I get people asking me, why aren't you on free radio? And I say, because we don't have any place to put the antenna. And so we need that. So in Santa Cruz recently, you may have noticed on Pacific Avenue what appears to be a loosening of the either vending laws or the enforcement practices around folks who are trying to display and sell their handicraft and jewelry, sometimes their music, and do so somewhat without very particular wedging into these four discs that define or have previously defined the legal space to be in if you are on Pacific Avenue with what they call a display device, which is, quote, anything capable of holding tangible things, table, guitar case, cup even. I suppose even a human being is capable of holding tangible things. I wouldn't call that a display device. It was used, this law, in the past to highly limit where people could be, cut back, and really significantly on the amount of public space on the sidewalks allowed for folks, even for people engaged in political activity like Huff. Huff hasn't been doing much political activity in the last few years, partially because of the constriction of space that this is involved in and the threats of significant ticketing and people not wanting to take that risk, though some of us are foolhardy as ever, or at least we think it's more important to assert a basic rights and not to allow the narrative to skew wildly to the right into this sort of crypto-fascist area where you do what a policeman says and then you feel fine, and then when the policeman comes along, whatever he tells you to do suddenly becomes the new law. But in any case, it seems to have been changing recently in Santa Cruz. Part of it is because I think of a state law or court decision. It's a little unclear to me, and I keep mentioning it, but never give the background or have taken the clear research turn to find that background. I think it actually has to do with a statewide court decision that was done actually on behalf of some taco vendors down in Los Angeles, if I have my recollection serves me right, maybe, who were being discriminated against by those granting permits and licenses. And so the state passed law, the city has to equally treat people who are all over who are vending whatever they're vending. So they can't, as they do in Santa Cruz now, even though the law in Santa Cruz still says this, they can't vend jewelry. They can't vend, that's the law. But now they're doing it anyway because the state law says you can't specify which items can be vended and which can't, unless you have some genuine public safety situation. And the liberality is extended to the fact that people are no longer sort of shoving themselves into these boxes, but being pretty setting up wherever they feel like it, or at least somewhat outside the boxes. I'm not sure if, I think there still have been, I've heard tell of some tickets being given, but I haven't got a lot of clear stats on that. There's an article in today's Sentinel. No, today's Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle, which headlines Panhandling, a Fact of Life on BART Trains and Stations, Citations Rare, Transit Directors Reluctant to Crack Down. Whether it's dancers parading through the trains and passing the hat or women holding babies begging in the stations, panhandling, even aggressive panhandling, is pretty much a fact of life on BART. And BART's board of directors appears content with keeping it that way. Just look at the numbers. This is a story by Phil Mathier, by the way. BART police have responded to 340 calls related to panhandling so far this year. Only two resulted in citations, and that's, of course, a figure I should follow up on here in Santa Cruz, but haven't. It's something that I may make a note of, since it's something that probably I could do. Panhandling sites.
although it's kind of it's complicated getting both, A, getting the police to give you the sites and then getting the courts to determine how many of them have actually been acted on. Getting calls for service can also be difficult. They're not kept in the same public records bins, so to speak. And if they have to make a record, they will charge you extra time and money to do it instead of presumably making available information because they're not bothering to collect it in a coherent form. Last year, BART police responded to 958 panhandling calls and issued only 3 citations. And, of course, I'd be curious to know if any of those went to court. BART's own customer code of conduct, adopted in 2013, prohibits anyone from begging or soliciting by accosting another person. Aggressive panhandling is also illegal under state law. However, the issue of what constitutes aggressive panhandling and how police should react when faced with it is another matter. For example, BART police, the story continues, have been instructed that panhandling for gratuitous donations, just asking for money, is a form of free speech and protected under the First Amendment. You would think that Santa Cruz police should be advised of the same thing, but they aren't, as far as I know. Although, again, I don't have stats on recent panhandling citations or calls for service or convictions or even trials. I do know that... What do I know? That aggressive panhandling, to me, really means harassing someone on the street. But most of the panhandling laws that this city passed in 1994 that have been largely unchanged with a few minor exceptions when we took a case or two to court and won, essentially say that if you are panhandling from a location, almost any location except the very few allowed locations, that is itself criminal behavior, even if you're not being aggressive at all, even if you're sitting quietly and silently with a sign. So it's ridiculous to call it aggressive panhandling, but it's the way of covering the behavior, which really is, we're getting rid of the homeless. Aren't you happy for that? And I think there was mention made, according to activist Keith McHenry, of a national statement by Führer Donald Trump, some call him the president, essentially referencing homeless people as something to be gotten rid of or got past or that shouldn't be around, and it's sort of giving a national imprimatur of a stamp of approval to hate actions against homeless folks. So it's long been the case on a local level here in Santa Cruz. And it's long been institutionally a case in the police and Parks and Rec and other agencies, or even Public Works with their hassles of recyclers and trying to get recycling and get a little bit of money from that recycling. In any case, our laws, which were created in 1994, that actually were intended to eliminate street culture and homeless culture on the streets and had nothing to do really with aggressive panhandling. But that provides the pretext, since people are also panhandling out there, and that's one of the things they do, and that's one of the reasons people congregate, is that, you know, they are indeed looking for support in an economy which isn't necessarily terribly supportive, in a city where rents are absurd, and where enforcement against human life functions such as sleeping continues, in spite of claims by city officials that they don't do that. So we have laws that 90% of the panhandling law is all about your location. You're not allowed to be here. You're not allowed to be there. And essentially, 98% of the sidewalk is made a criminal territory for even holding up a sign silently. And if you really look at the wording of the law, although this has never been implemented, it's not just where you're standing, but where the person walking by is. So they tell you you're not supposed to stand or hold up a sign within 14 feet of a building, corner, bench, phone, Instateller, recycling bin, fence. There's a whole series of so-called bases for a forbidden zone of 14 feet, which really leaves very little of the sidewalk to be on. But the actual wording of the ordinance says that if your sign can be seen by someone within that 14-foot area, that you are engaging in a crime by the wording of the ordinance. I've never seen it enforced that way, but it could be. It's very badly written. It was designed to give the police maximum power to harass. And organizations like HUF, the group I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, are intent on pushing back against laws and practices like this. But continuing the story, in order for an officer to take an enforcement action, a panhandler has to be overly aggressive. This sounds like a guy who is a fan of the panhandling enforcement practices or wants stiffer practices. Or accost someone, BART spokesman Chris Filippi said. Oh, he's just quoting Chris Filippi. Okay. Examples of aggressive panhandling in the BART police manual include the use of overt or veiled threats, the invasion of personal space by cornering, blocking, or following others, touching others in an effort to solicit, reaching or leaning across a seated BART customer to solicit, or intimidating or obstructing vehicular or pedestrian traffic to solicit. Now, except for the last one, which it sounds to me like can be easily used and misused by police, this obstructing stuff. Unless you mean by obstructing, if you don't move out of the way, then you're obstructing. But rather, if you say that just being in a certain portion of the sidewalk obstructs that portion of the sidewalk, even if the rest of the sidewalk is completely clear, then in essence you're saying you can't be on the sidewalks. This pretext was used against the Freedom Sleepers in front of the City Hall to essentially end the Freedom Sleeping activity, demanding itself there be changes in the sleeping ban law. And that's how they drove away Freedom Sleepers from City Hall area, by falsely using obstructing the sidewalk laws. But aside from that, these other ways of defining aggressive panhandling aren't a bad thing to do. You know, if someone's using threats, if there's an invasion of personal space by cornering, blocking, or following, if you're touching others, these could be a legitimate basis for a law. But they're not the basis of the Santa Cruz laws. You've got to check out the Santa Cruz ordinances to find out what those ordinances are. And in fact, I'll mention them briefly. So 9.10 is the ordinance, Municipal Code 9.10. Solicitation means any verbal request or any nonverbal request made with a sign by a person seeking an immediate donation of money, food, cigarettes, or items of value. Purchase of an item for an amount exceeding its value, under circumstances where a reasonable person would understand that the purchase is in substance a donation, is a donation for purposes of this chapter. In other words, don't ask for donations. That's a crime. A person is not soliciting for purposes of this chapter when he or she passively displays a sign or places a collection container on the sidewalk, in pursuit of which he or she receives monetary offerings in appreciation for his or her original artwork, or for entertainment, or a street performance he or she provides. So what that means is that's the way of essentially the musicians and artists' exception. But those who are simply begging are criminals. And specifically, how this is done is any person who solicits after sunset or before sunrise is guilty of an infraction. It's punishable by $200 to $300. So ask for a dime at night, that's a crime. Having up a sign asking for a dime at night, that's a crime. Any person who solicits in any of the following places, guilty: a bus stop, public transportation vehicle, in a public transportation vehicle, in any vehicle on the street, you can't ask for money from a car, on private property without the permission of the owner, within 14 feet of any building or any portion of the building is recessed from the public sidewalk, 14 feet shall be measured from the point at which the building abuts the sidewalk, within 50 feet of a bank, in the parking lot of any bank, within 50 feet of an ATM machine, within 14 feet of any fence, any drinking fountain, public phone, public bench, public trash compactor, information or directory map sign, sculpture or artwork displayed on public property or vending cart, street corner or intersection, open-air dining area or cafe extension, any kiosk. And here's how you can be guilty of by the manner of solicitation. If you come within 3 feet of a person solicited, when the person has indicated that he or she, until they've indicated that they wish to make a donation, if you block the path of the person, these two are not unreasonable. By following a person, that's also not unreasonable, who walks away from the solicitor. By using abusive language as part of the solicitation or following a refusal that is directed at the specific individual or individuals being solicited. In other words, be nice to us as we ignore you on the street. We're busy shopping. Don't fucking bother us. We can say fuck you as we walk by because we're not soliciting. But if you've asked for a dime and we say no and then you say fuck you, you're fucked. If you solicit in a group of two or more persons, you can't sit with your child or your friend while under the influence of alcohol or any legal narcotic or controlled substance. So you can't have had a drink and be sitting with a sign saying, I need money. And you can't solicit if you're in possession of a dog, even if the dog is on a leash. And there's more. This one goes on. Also, if you do this twice within a six-month period, it's a misdemeanor punishable by up to 6 months in jail or a $1,000 fine. I think I have that right. It could be a year in jail, but I think it's either six months, possibly 3 months, but it's certainly a jail term, somewhere between 3 months and a year. That's the Santa Cruz ordinances, folks, in beautiful, liberal Santa Cruz. Now, again, I don't have the stats about how it's actually being done, so one of these days I'll try to get them to you if I ever get them myself. If you're interested in any of these issues, we do have an organization which, if we had more people, would look into it more thoroughly. That's HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And we meet every Wednesday at noon. And actually, if you come at 11, you'll kind of merge with the earlier organization that meets Conscience in Action. And we meet at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, right next to the Bike Church. So come on down if these issues interest you, or call me at 423-HUF, or 423-4833, if these kinds of things are something that you want to be involved in, but you're not a big fan of meetings. So it looks like San Francisco, then this is a much longer article that I'm looking at of the Panhandling Just a Fact of Life at BART. BART, of course, is Bay Area Rapid Transit. It's the subway, in case anybody missed that one. I'll read a little bit more of it. In those cases, an officer must witness what happened, or a victim must be willing to make a statement to the officer and be willing to go to court. Philippi said, BART police experience has been that when most people call an officer over someone panhandling, they're satisfied to have the officer show up and resolve the matter, Philippi said. Riders typically don't want to pursue it further. BART Police Officers Association President Keith Garcia added, even if you have all those factors, our policy still directs us to utilize social services rather than arrest the offender, whatever social services he's talking about. That's why officers are more likely to eject an offender than make an arrest. Well, that's a removal of a person's right to be there. It may sound like a nice, mild thing to do rather than take a person to court, but it may not have that. It may not feel that way to the person it's happening to. After the stabbing death of 18-year-old Nia Wilson on the MacArthur Station platform last summer, BART General Manager Grace Cronican offered an array of safety measures for the board to consider, including a ban on all panhandling in the paid areas. Although why you should link panhandling with stabbing on one case, again, is it's kind of like the closing the Loudon Nelson bathrooms because of a couple of incidents that Izeth Ray, the head of the Loudon Nelson Center, supervisor at Parks and Rec area there, mentioned at the City Council's Public Safety Committee, I'm sorry, at the Parks and Rec Commission, and I'm going to be going into that case in more detail this Sunday in the longer show that I do, which starts at 9:30. So if you want to hear some of the Parks and Recreation Commission hearing, you can tune in then. So there was a Parks and Recreation meeting at 4 o'clock on Monday, July 1st. As I mentioned, I'm going to be playing that, a lot of the audio from that, or some of it anyway, on Sunday, morning. The commission met, and they talked about the downtown streets team, and they also did an item on supposedly whether the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms should be reopened, or rather, it was, do we agree that they should be kept closed, which was how it was phrased and how they actually agreed to it. And also, I'll read you what the ultimate outcome was according to the summary which was presented. I recorded some of it, and it's a good thing that I did because, in spite of the promise of the staff member who was covering this, first of all, he didn't present a packet of information for the agenda, the public, until we demanded that he do so when he did, finally. And then, secondly, he promised that he would have an audio out of this in time for this broadcast today. He has not. Nor is there an audio available for the last meeting in May, which was almost 2 months ago now. Actually, it's about 2 months ago. But there is a statement of the motions that happened. Commissioner Mio, seconded by Commissioner Chair J.M. Brown, whose behavior was he's not my choice for either city council chair of this commission or any kind of activity involving homeless services or civil rights. Moved to have the city attorney provide input on legally limiting access to restroom facilities at Loudoun Nelson Community Center and come back to the commission for future policies for patrons using the facility for classes, programs, or other scheduled uses, and have staff start a restroom attendant pilot program upon input received from the commission and city attorney. Interesting. I didn't quite get that, all of that. Now, maybe I missed some of it because I was kind of fuming about and stalking about the room myself and in and out of the chambers probably at different points. But what happened was one of the commissioners, said that there seemed to be a state law which required some bathroom access, and she wanted to make sure that the city was in compliance. That's not what's mentioned in this motion, but I think that was part of it. And there was a discussion there were essentially five people who urged the reopening of the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms immediately. Some said, well, there are other solutions. They can have an attendant if you want, or you can have people sign in, all of which I think is ridiculous. But, you know, that was some of the proposals which were made. And there was only one person who favored keeping them closed, and that was the person who closed them, Izeth Ray, supporting her own decision, the superintendent of Loudoun Nelson and the Parks and Rec, that section of the Parks and Rec covering it. Then there was a friendly amendment to keep existing restroom policies in place until further information is received. So the commission, although it doesn't have the power to mandate this, is backing up Tony Elliott, the boss of Parks and Rec, who was there, in essentially excluding the overwhelming majority of people from Loudoun Nelson bathrooms unless they're coming there for a program. You can't walk in and use a public bathroom, which, of course, is outrageous. Then there was a motion by Mio, seconded by Brown, to approve to modify a section of the municipal code to create a series of health, safety, and environmental conditions under which the director has the discretion to close either partially or entirely a park, open space, or facility. And this is a complete inversion of what was presented to the City Council by Councilmember Glover, who was concerned about inappropriate authority being used to engage in closures of bathrooms. The San Lorenzo bathrooms were closed for nearly a whole year. City Hall bathrooms have been closed for 3 years now. It's pretty outrageous. And, of course, Loudoun Nelson is closed simply on the say-so of the head of the Parks and Rec. It has nothing to do with any kind of public process. So he wanted to make sure there was a public process. This, in essence, says, creates a set of healthy conditions under which gives the director discretion. The director already has discretion. I suppose it's a step toward clarifying that. But right now, it doesn't limit his discretion now. It doesn't say he has to go to City Council to do that, which was what the actual original motion by Glover was. which Mayor Watkins refused to put on the agenda in a timely way. And when it did get on, it was dumped ahead 3 months into a well, let's talk about it as a part of a broader charter discussion, while everybody holds their vulva or their weenie and wanders off into the bushes to discharge what their necessities are. Anyway, there's also a motion to notify the commission and city council within 24 hours of an emergency closure of facility or 7 days before a planned closure and provide an estimated time for reopening. That's good. Establish a 21-day requirement to present an update to city council after a closure. That's good, too, although, again, it's not 14 days, suddenly 21 days. And work with the county's health services on addressing syringe litter as well as public urination and defecation and our parks and open spaces. However, there's no mention of the fact that Sharps containers were removed from the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms somewhere between 5 and 10 years ago and have not been restored. And there's only, as far as I know, one or two places. There were two places in town where you could dump your needles. One was the large needle container near the bus stop along Water Street, near next to the county building. And the second was at Ross Camp, when there was a Ross Camp. Just like there used to be porta-potties there when there was a Ross Camp, and there isn't anymore, and nothing has been done to replace it. Meanwhile, there is a Commissioner Green site added friendly language that the notify City Council of any closures lasting more than 21 days or by the next available council meeting, so it gives them, the Parks and Rec bosses, even more time to delay if they want to do some emergency closing. Of course, what they've done so far is they've closed bathrooms and provided no notice to the city council or the public, except if you happen to wander over there and try to use the bathroom, you see a little notice on the door, closed due to vandalism. Of course, you don't get to know the nature of the vandalism, the costs, whether this is simply part of a community pressure drive by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz Neighbors or Friends of the Depot Park or whatever the latest bigot special is that's coming forward to move out visible homeless people in the area. In any case, So, meanwhile, getting back to the San Francisco article on panhandling and the BART stations and the attempt to toughen up the get rid of them panhandlers, the suggestions have been met with silence by board members. There are several board members who are opposed to any action on panhandling would mean criminalizing the behavior, as many of the panhandlers are poor, Director Robert Rayburn said. Polarizing people about non-aggressive panhandling does not help BART succeed with our biggest problems, board president Bevan Duffy said. Instead, the board is looking for ways to reduce fare evasions and so forth and so on. And then the article continues at some length in the San Francisco Chronicle by Phil Mattier. Citations rare, transit directors reluctant to crack down. And I would suggest, unfortunately, in a way, citations are rare for people urinating in the bushes outside the Loudoun Nelson Center because they can't get into the bathrooms. I think they should be more frequent. I think it's, as some have said, when they can't use the bathroom, I think it might be appropriate to advise people that if they have to go, they're going to have to go. And if you're going to treat them that way, they'll do what they have to do, if necessary, on the door of your establishment, particularly if it's a so-called public establishment. That isn't something that either Huff or Conscience in Action endorses, although we are having a press release, press conference in response to this. We're doing nothing to reopen the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms decision by the Parks and Rec Commission, and more important, by Tony Elliott, who really heads the Parks and Rec Department and was at that meeting as well, and can at any time snap his fingers and open the bathrooms again. I mean, he has the power to do that. He's refusing to do it. I mean, after all, I mean, he's got a bathroom. What does he care? And he's had some very nice conversations with us, and that's very nice. But that doesn't really change the situation. So on Monday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be outside Parks and Rec on Church Street, right across from the City Council Chambers, next to the Civic Auditorium, inviting people to come and going to present their positions, whether it's squatting, standing, or kneeling. I think we're probably talking mostly about verbal positions. We also will be presenting a helpful makeshift porta-potty, so to speak, of our own devising, since the city can't seem to either provide them for people in inadequate numbers and at requisite times. They don't mind taking them away, as they did at Ross Camp, but they don't want to provide them. And also, we will be having a speak out to describe people's experiences, and we'll also be encouraging people to sign up for the next protest, which will be a week later at Loudoun Nelson, when there will be a direct action that will involve assuring accessibility, since the city, the managers of Loudoun Nelson can't seem to manage opening up bathrooms to elderly people, to poor people, to homeless folks, to ordinary visitors who need to use those bathrooms, and the community can step in and lend a hand. That's the idea. And that'll be happening at 2 o'clock on Monday the 15th, if I read my calendar right. Let's catch a little dialogue from Food Not Bombs. And actually, no, I'm gonna have to put that ahead until Sunday. Let's hear from Alicia Cool and her proposal for a park-in, which is now going on and will continue until, I guess, 8 o'clock on Friday, July 5th. This is in protest to the harassment of people in RVs who are parking for less than 72 hours but are being given little stickers, green stickers, compliments of people like Joe Habe, enforcement officer. At least this is the report I'm getting, saying that they've been there for 72 hours and they have to move or else, when in fact they haven't. And these kinds of false behaviors that are part of a, maybe it's simply an attempt to respond to complaints by neighbors who feel entitled to move people on the streets away, even those who are doing nothing criminal, because it's their million-dollar house, and therefore they have a right to their view, and they have a right to control the public area around them, which is just not true. It's a community space, sorry, and if you don't like that, go to Saudi Arabia and buy yourself a kingdom. You know, I mean, that's instead of trying to bring Saudi Arabia here. Anyway, you're going to hear some of that now. And before you do, know that this goes on tonight. If you want to go out there, it's out at Woodrow and Westcliff Drive, and you'll see some RVs. Just go up and knock on them and offer support, get more information, give your own reports about what's been going on, or give me a call on the Huff line at 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. And that's going to be about it for this edition of Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadside. So I'll talk to you again on Sunday. Sorry, here we're going to begin again. It is July 2nd, almost 25 to 9. I'm standing here with a man whose home is his vehicle out here on Woodrow near Westcliff, where a number of vehicles are parked in what appears to be a beginning of a park-in protest, or at least assertion of rights or solidarity action. And you say you had an experience earlier today?
Yeah, it's Angel. I had an experience earlier today. I was standing at the cliff, just watching the water and enjoying the day. When I decided to come back over this way, I turned around to cross the street. I noticed there was a man sitting on his bicycle just staring over this way at the vehicles, and he had an ugly look on his face, so I decided to pull my phone out and video record the incident. So I crossed the street, and he said hi to me. I said hi back, and then he asked me which vehicle was mine or which van was mine. I said the green one. I says, well, you have a good afternoon. I started walking like I was going to cross the street away from him, and he said, why don't you just get out of here? And I still have my phone on record, video record. So I turned around and said, excuse me. And he didn't want to say it then. And I approached him. I asked him a couple more times, do you want to repeat what you said? So you're not going to say it again now that I turned around, I have you being recorded. That's another thing he told me. As I turned around, I started walking back to him. He told me, he says, why don't you stop recording? And I says, well, this is public space. I have every legal right to record out here.
And
you stop harassing would be the question. you stop harassing, I'll stop recording, maybe, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
you can do it for more than 5 seconds at a time.
Yeah, I'm going to record, you know, every incident possible that I can.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been parked out here, Angel?
I've only been parked out here for probably about an hour, maybe a little over an hour, but, you know, it's, we just, you know, pretty much just got here, like, and we're parked on a public street. Actually, we have the right to be here for 72 hours, I believe it is, and then we have to move, I believe it's a mile from the spot. But yeah, we're here for maybe just over an hour, and you know, guys are telling me, "Do you want you just get out of here?" Fool, shut up, you goddamn clown.
Indeed. Have you experienced problems elsewhere in town, Angel?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've been physically threatened a couple times.
When was the most recent incident?
The most recent incident, besides today. Actually, when we were parking over by CVS, the people in CVS were giving us a bad time. Like, I would go in, and every single time, and I keep my receipt to purchase, whatever. And as a customer, I have the right to use the bathroom. We got to a point where they didn't want to let us use the bathroom, but they were making excuses, and we had to call, you know, corporate and. The security guard in there, you know, he threatened me, you know, tried to entice me into I guess, a fight, you know, try to get in my face and this and that. But instead of, falling into his enticement, I decided, you know, we called the called corporate, and we dealt with that, and now the bathrooms are being provided for customers 24/7.
And this is the CVS
on Mission.
And when did this all happen?
Oh, this has been occurring it just actually stopped probably within the last, I'd have to say, few weeks. But prior to that, it went on for a good couple of months. Yeah, good couple of months. They're really discriminatory towards the group, our group that parks right there alongside of on that street, actually. And
did they wave at you? I know it's the same as we're talking there.
Yeah.
It's twilight here, and there are people walking by. Some of them are friendly.
Yes.
You know.
So I've noticed. Yeah, some are friendly. Some have said hi and waved, and but some you could just see the scowls and the looks of like, oh no, there goes the neighborhood.
Hey, Greta.
Don't scream at me.
And well, I know you were involved in a protest at the police station some months ago when we tried to get the police chief to agree to let people know who are filing a lot of complaints about supposed staying past 72-hour period, that if they were making false statements, A, it was a crime, and B, the police have ways of knowing whether that's the case. He seemed to indicate that at some point. Do you remember that conversation?
Oh, God, there's been so many different incidents.
Maybe you weren't at that protest. At the police station.
At the police station.
You showed up at one where nobody showed up.
Yeah.
But this was somewhat earlier. Alicia probably remembers it. She's here with her vehicle. We're standing in front of her her Tayoga.
No, but I definitely remember during the Occupy movement when we surrounded the Santa Cruz County Jail, Santa Cruz City Jail, with about 200 of us.
The numbers have dropped since then, but the people are still around one place or another anyway.
Yeah, the heart's still beating. It still beats.
Yeah. And we've been talking with?
Angel.
Thanks, Angel.
Thank you.
All right. Well, here's another woman who's involved in this. Emma, what's your name, madam?
Alicia Cool.
You're in your car about to make a sign of some kind?
Yes. Can you hand me that big pen over there?
I guess someone's giving you the pen. So what's this all about? Why are you...
There's one for you, Angel.
Yeah. You're handing Angel a blank poster board, and here's a...
I'll let you use the pen as soon as I'm done. Yes, we're making signs because there are people living in this neighborhood that think it's okay to post very, very hateful letters on people's things, citing Santa Cruz civil codes that are actually... or codes of procedure that are actually really not legal under Martin versus Boise. We don't have adequate shelters, so people have a right to camp in their vehicles or live in their vehicles right now. That's an alternative housing option for many folks. And they have the right to park for 72 night. Hours. And people are not respecting that right. They're putting taping terrible notes to people's vehicles. They're creeping around at night. They're staring at people. Angel had someone tell him to go away earlier. I had a lady drive by and tell me to get lost, bitch. So it's pretty hostile. And all we're doing is parking. All we're doing here is parking.
You're not dumping waste on the street?
We're not doing anything.
What about
like
those
that?
Needles that are surrounding this vehicle?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, of course, the squalling of the children. You're disturbing the, I don't know, the doggies in the ice plant that are running around.
Yeah.
That's ice plant or it's some kind of growth over there.
No, we don't have any pets. We're not bothering anybody. They're just bothering us, really.
All right. Oh, they're keeping an eye. I guess it's you're kind of a topic of discussion at the moment.
Probably. Aren't I always?
So what is your intention here? You've been here now. How long have you parked here this time?
Well, this started at 8.
8 o'clock.
It's going from 8 to 8, three days from now.
Starting 8 in the evening tonight?
Yes, 8 to 8 for the next 72 hours.
So it's going to be 4th of July celebration coming up?
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to be here during the day probably, but we're going to be parking here at night with our signs, making a presence that everybody has a right to park for 72 hours.
And you actually could park... could come back every night and park here, because if you're away for a period of time, that satisfies the 72-hour move-along law.
It does.
So that's interesting.
I would love to see this become a regular thing here. We need anybody and everybody who's a vehicle dweller to come join us.
Dig it. Well, that was Angel, and your name again, madam?
Alicia Cool.
And Alicia, you're working with this group, the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless. I understand there's still some national organizing going on. Keith McHenry, I spoke with him today. He said he was on a conference call to the, activists in other cities, Marysville, Salinas, back east. You guys went to a Washington conference and returned. I was a little poo-poo-ish about the whole thing. But... here you are doing stuff. Are you likely to get any support from the moguls in Washington and elsewhere?
Well, we're always in solidarity, and I'm hoping people will learn from me and do the same thing elsewhere. I mean, we're banding together in different cities across all 50 states right now to change the narrative in our cities. And, I mean, any way we can do that, if that means peaceful demonstrations, if that means letters, if that means making people feel uncomfortable, I mean, whatever we can do to change the narrative together is, you know, we have to take any step that we can. So I don't expect overnight that something like this is going to change everything, but it's part of changing the narrative, one step at a time.
Now, Councilmember Drew Glover, who I spoke to within about an hour ago, when he heard about this protest, he hadn't heard of it before, even though I posted a story about it about 6 or 8 hours ago.
Well, it's fairly new. I mean, I just planned it in like one day, so.
Mm-hmm. He was a bit concerned that there are some who might not be as nonviolent and clean and bourgeois as others about in this protest. They might dump gasoline and oil on the streets and leave debris and trash of
How
different
do you spell
sorts.
Harassment, Robert.
I think it's harassment. It's always difficult when you run out of space on a sign. Makes you look like you're struggling with it.
That's okay. We'll work this through.
So, yeah, it looks like a pleasant evening out here so far. No brickbats, no tomatoes, no taunts.
Well, we were hoping to get cake, but then their machine was down, so now we have to go back and use cash.
Cake for... what do you mean?
Just cake. Just, you know, to have some cake.
What, is it somebody's birthday coming up?
Yeah, it's the birth of the National Homeless Union.
I see. Well, I know tomorrow there is a meeting of the Conscience and Action group followed by Huff, where we'll be reporting on the exciting public lack of safety committee that met on Monday. You may remember that.
Yes, I do remember that.
I think actually I...
I don't know if I'll be here tomorrow, though. I have to go out of town.
So you may not be making the Conscience and Action meeting.
I may not.
And it'll be a sad day without you. Boy, the waves are high tonight. They're splashing up there. I can see the ocean from here looking out on the water. Anything you want to add? Any message? This will be played on Thursday night, probably.
No, just the same thing. You know, I'm going to keep reiterating that we need to change the narrative. And if you want to join the Santa Cruz Homeless Union, let us know. You can reach out by finding us on Facebook, Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates, / Santa Cruz Homeless Union. And you can reach out to Huff or even Food Not Bombs. We have a table at Food Not Bombs every Saturday and Sunday from 4 to 6. And they have good food.
They're at the main post office downtown. Well, cool. Or should I say thank you, Alicia Cool?
Thank you, Robert Norris.
What's your name, sir?
Whiskey Jack.
And Whiskey Jack, you say?
Yeah.
WJ, what brings you to this neck of the road?
I live over here on the west side.
And are you in a vehicle yourself?
No.
So are you...
I'm just busy.
As you know, are you in a field? Are you living outside?
Does it matter?
Well, of course, we don't want your kind around here. If you're an outsider...
Am I an outsider?
Well, you're either an insider or an outsider. Either you're in or you're out.
I'm in a cave.
You live in a cave, huh? Well, that's interesting. Now, what about this questionable individual with you? What's your name, sir?
Caveman.
Any comments? Any comments about this situation?
No, I think it's unfair for the motorhome people who own motorhomes.
To be hassled.
Be hassled, yeah.
I take it that's one of the reasons you're here too, Jack?
No, not really.
Well, just sort of hanging out?
Just hanging out, man.
Saying hello to the family that's here?
Yeah. Kind of basically. What are you doing here?
I'm providing propaganda, literature, and radio sort of-ish support.
My
usual way, you know.
Free radio up at UCSC?
No, it's pirate radio, which is off the air, but on the stream down here in Santa Cruz.
Oh, that's cool.
Well, it's on the internet worldwide, but it's not on the air anywhere yet at the moment. So, how long have you been visiting here today?
About 20 minutes.
Has it been a pretty friendly situation? Any problems here that you've noticed? Any growls from neighbors?
No.
It's been pretty mellow.
Yeah, I haven't done anything. So.
No, I mean, but have there was a concern that some neighbors were being hostile to people in their vans.
Are they?
Well, I haven't seen it happen while I was here.
I haven't seen it either. I've been here 20 minutes and I haven't seen anybody.
That's good. Maybe it's if it had been happening before, there's been a change. So that could be. Let's ask these individuals in here what's going on.
Oh, hello.
What's your name, madam?
This is Cooper. And we're having a children's jubilee here with coloring.
Yeah, we're having fun.
And Eric Jr. here has a shaker egg. We're having a little music time going on.
Yep, and we're having good time.
What is your name, sir? I mean,
Evelyn.
And what are you doing there?
I'm coloring a nice picture of a cat.
True enough. And you colored her ears red, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pink.
It is pink. And Cooper, you're normally a musician downtown.
Oh, yes. That is one of the hats I wear, is the musician downtown. Alicia is a good friend of mine, so we're here visiting, and I love kids and have kids of my own, and so this has been a good day. We're having a good time.
Do you live in your vehicle as well?
No, we live in a tent.
So you actually are an illegal camper? Is that what you're confessing to here on tape?
Well, I don't think we're actually illegally. I think we're in a gray area.
Yes.
I think we've outlasted the gray area. I think we actually live in the ocean.
We've lived there almost 17 months.
You're sort of an aquamariner type.
We're aquamarines. Yeah, that's my birthstone. That's funny.
There's some guy with a hat next to you. What's that guy's name?
And this is Dread Eye.
And Dread Eye, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay.
And are you you're a vehicle man yourself?
Yes, I am.
And how are the population of Santa Cruz treating you?
Actually, the police have been actually pretty nice to me lately. And I actually drove the wrong way on a one-way today. And a cop saw me and waved his hand. I stopped. And he said, "I said, I'm sorry, officer. I didn't mean to do that." He goes, "You know that was a one-way." I said, "I won't do it again." He waved me on, so I left.
Shocking. Shocking the amount of criminality that's allowed in our town.
I was really thought that was cool of him to let me slide on that.
All right. Well, that sounds like, not bad news. Okay, but we'll leave that one aside. Thank you all for this little note, momentary chat, whatever. Someone has a sign. What does that sign say, sir?
It says, "I really don't care, do you?"
And where does that come from?
Well, Melania wore that on the back of her jacket.
And Melania, remind us, is...
The lady, the immigrant, that is now our fraudulent first lady.
Oh, right. And it does come back to me now, yeah. Indeed. I won't let that one pass.
Right?
Right. So, you might want to, clarify it that...
Well, why did I use her slogan?
Well, you might clarify it for your sign. Some people may not pick up on it.
I made a sign for our protest here, our parking protest. And, so people have making signs, so I decided to make one. And what came to mind was, "I really don't care, do you?" And I got that from the slogan that was on the back of Melania's jacket.
Right.
And I decided to go ahead and take that and use it for us.
Take it.
Yeah. For the cause, for the resistance, the revolution.
The park-in.
Indeed it is.
And we've been talking with
Angel.
Thank you, Angel.
Thank you.
Having an additional interview with Alicia Cool, who's, as darkness has fallen here, it is, it's about 10 after 9. At least you say there's a woman across the street in a corner house who is keeping a close eye on you.
Yeah, she lives in this little brown house over here in the corner, and she likes to stare at us from her window, her front window. She stares at us. She stared at Angel earlier. I'm pretty sure that it's her that puts the notes out because she likes to stare at us. And another thing that she does...
What notes?
The notes that say that you can't park here, that it's considered camping, that they're watching this neighborhood and that their neighborhood is not a campground, and those type of notes.
Now, how do you... Is it because simply she's watching you that you assume it's her in the notes?
Well, not just that, but because, like, this morning when we drove away, we drove our RV out of here, and then we just went right down the street to go get something out of the car, and then we turned around, came right back, and drove past here, and she had moved the little BMW that they have into the spot where our RV was, but had parked it right in the middle so that, like, you know, we couldn't park here again, and nobody of a large size could park here again. She does that. We notice that she intentionally parks her car from clear of there across the street in this row so that other people can't.
So you're parked next to the, to the park side of the street, which has no houses but has a open space, trees, grass, and so forth.
Right. I typically like to park in spots like this because then nobody can actually claim that you're parked in front of their house. I would think that it's less disturbing for people, but it's not, apparently. They target you anyways and go out of their way in the wee hours of the night to tape notes on all over your vehicles.
So when was the last time you this taping occurred?
Last night.
And what time did this happen?
Well, I mean, I go to bed around, 10 or 11, and I get up really early because the kids, around 5 or 6. So sometime within those hours...
And what kind of a note was it that appeared, and where did it appear on your vehicle?
It was a 3-page note taped to the side of my my front by my window. And it was like I described to you, no camping. These are the ordinances Santa Cruz says don't camp. And it said something about no sleeping between the hours of
11 and 8:30
or something like that, because that's what's considered camping, according to these people.
According to the Santa Cruz Municipal Code, 6.36010.
Well, it's illegal under Martin versus Boise unless they have adequate shelter for our entire family.
The law is unconstitutional, correct.
Right, permanent shelter, and not something I'm going to give up my RV for, which is technically a permanent shelter, to go live at the Rebley for 6 months, you know, and then be out on the street with a tent, because I don't consider that an option.
And now a break from the narrative with a little, be our last song of the evening, but we'll have some more narrative after this, followed by perhaps your action in defending the park-in folks and keeping your eyes open for harassment in your neighborhood.
Oh, I am just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rise and smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, you've given me a number, and you've taken off my name. To get around this campus, why, you almost need a plane. And you're supporting Chiang Kai-shek while I'm supporting Mao. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. I wish that you'd make up your mind, I wish that you'd decide, that I should live as freely as those who live outside. Cause we also are entitled to the rights to be endowed. And when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, you'd like to be my father, you'd like to be my dad, and give me kisses when I'm good and spank me when I'm bad. But since I left my parents, I've forgotten how to bow. So when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. And things, they might be different if I was here alone. But I've got a friend or two who no longer live at home. And we'll respect our elders just as long as they allow. That when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. I've read of other countries where the students take a stand. They've even helped to overthrow the leaders of the land. Now I wouldn't go so far to say we're also learning how, but when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. So keep right on a-talking and tell us what to do. But if nobody listens, my apologies to you. And I know that you were younger once, cause you sure are older now. And when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now. Oh, I'm just a student, sir, and only want to learn. But it's hard to read through the rising smoke from the books that you like to burn. So I'd like to make a promise, and I'd like to make a vow, that when I've got something to say, sir, I'm gonna say it now.
And that was Phil Oakes. I'm gonna say it now. Back to the park-in protest. Had a conversation with this woman?
No. She just likes to stare at us. She seems like the kind of lady that if you approached her to have a conversation, she'd either be really hostile or, like, pretend to be afraid and call the cops on you.
And you've been parked in this area near Woodrow and Westcliff for how long?
Just a couple of hours, actually.
Has it been a couple of weeks on and off?
No, actually, I typically park in a completely different location, but I got a green warning sticker after only being there for, I think it was 48 hours, and we got a green warning sticker, so we didn't want Habee to potentially think that we... See, this is where I think it's really messed up that they do this, because even though we weren't parked for 72 hours, they make you have stress and fear that if you don't move, even though you haven't been there the legal amount of time, that he can come back and tow you because he put a green sticker. So obviously that gives him the authority to do that. So he puts this green warning sticker warning. If you know, I come back and see this vehicle, essentially it says, and it's not moved a mile away from where it's parked at right now, I will give you a ticket and or tow you away.
Do you have a copy of this sticker?
Yeah, I have several copies of the sticker. The green one's in my Prius, though, parked on the street, the newest one.
Mm-hmm.
But they all essentially say the same thing. And so whenever he gives you, puts this on your vehicle, whether you've been parked there for 48, you know, 24, or even 2 hours, you have to immediately move, because if he comes back and sees this vehicle in the same location, who knows what he's going to do? He's empowered to do something else because he's assuming it's been there for 72 hours.
That's what the green sticker says?
Exactly. That's why I've been, you know, questioning this law, because he doesn't have to prove that you've been here for 72 hours. All he has to do is put a green sticker and then show back up. And then if you're still there, he can do something to you. He doesn't really have to prove that you violated anything.
And you're talking about Joe Habe, who's, I guess, formerly a lieutenant and may still be a lieutenant in the Santa Cruz Police Department, recently given a reward or an award by Chief Mills.
Exactly. And I've talked about this law. I've questioned whatever it is that they're doing, this enforcement, because I don't think it's legal to just assume how long somebody's been parked there, put a sticker, forcing them to move a mile away from wherever they're parked at and or come back and cite them. I just don't think it's legal to assume that. You should prove that they've been there for over 72 hours before you touch their vehicle.
Now, you said also when we spoke on the phone this morning that your response to this this new three-page attachment to your car, which was different than the sticker, right, that you got of the previous...
Yeah, no, this is different. This is why I'm actually parked in this new location. I got the warning, the green warning, after being parked there approximately 48 hours. So I wasn't allowed to just move, you know, and then come back like I normally do. Here he is intercepting the process that I've been doing for several months now and avoiding him successfully. But here he is, Habe, down freaking street I've been parking on peacefully. Dun-dun-dun-dun, Habe, with his green warning sticker after only 48 hours.
Now, how do you know it was Joe Habe? Did he sign this?
He signed Joe Habe. They're all signed Joe Habe. He's the only parking enforcement officer that does this.
How many tickets have you gotten or warnings have you gotten?
Green stickers, approximately, in the 9 months or so that I've been doing this now, unfortunately, about four. But like I said, I've been avoiding him for several months now. And so now, since I got one, I have to get off of his radar again and avoid him.
Get out of his area.
Get out of his area, even though I was only parked there 48 hours.
Get out of his town, maybe.
So now I park in an entirely different area at Woodrow, currently, where we are doing the protests. And I only was parked at Woodrow not even 24 hours. And here's this lady, potentially. It could have been anyone, by the way. But here's someone putting this three-page note, taping it to my vehicle, talking about how unwelcome we are here.
Now, when Habe gave you this last thing that prompted you to move, had you been parked for 48 hours, or had you parked, moved away and come back?
I believe we probably moved away and come back, but we were parked there like a large part of like a day and a half. Like, but
that's not the same. If you move...
Well, and Angel can confirm, we don't park there, none of us ever park there consistently for longer than that, because Monday through Friday, you can only park there for 2 hour increments at a time, because it's, unless you have a permit. So the only time that you can park there, and I know that it was less than 72 hours, because it was like Friday to Saturday afternoon. And so, we typically park there through the weekend because that's 72 hours.
So in actuality, you weren't even at that location for 48 hours. And you say here you have been parking. This 72-hour protest you're doing doesn't really involve 72 hours since you'll be leaving during the day.
Right. But I'm hoping that throughout the, you know, the 72 hours that we at least have some representation here to let people know that we, in fact, can park for 72 hours here, you know, off and on, and whenever we like. The homeowners here do not own the streets. People have a right to park. And, you know, if they don't like that, they shouldn't have bought, you know, houses close to a, you know, beach area that a lot of people like to come to. I'm sorry.
Now, you had a conversation with the police this morning by phone after receiving this 3-page document, right?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, the police conversation, actually, I need to check my messages because I don't believe I got a call back from Andy Mills today.
The chief of police.
Right.
And what you did talk to one of his subordinates?
I got a call from his secretary who said that he would be calling me back, but he did not.
And was there any other... You said you had a conversation with one of the officers, though?
Oh, well, yeah, it was the graveyard sergeant, I guess, supervisor for this area.
And what was the nature of that conversation?
Well, I asked him if he can do something about, like, the fact that the vigilantes here feel empowered to, like, do things like this, to vandalize people's vehicles, to sneak around at night. And I told him I consider it vandalism when you tape things to people's vehicles and it, you know, peels off the paint. Or they have to scrape off, you know, tape residue. I consider that like vandalism, but he said that it's not, which is the reason that I now have tape and flyers to tape to other people's vehicles in rebuttal. I mean, if it's not vandalism, I can do it too.
You hope you have this guy's name.
Well, he told me that the conversation was being recorded, and we spoke approximately 15 minutes.
That may be, but he has the recording and you don't.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So I'd say call him up again and clarify, is it okay for me to walk around and tape things up to other people's vehicles?
Well, he, you know, he had no problem with the lady doing it to my vehicle. He
and then when you
repeated, no, over
I understand,
and
but
over.
I understand that.
Would
you,
it's not vandalism.
But what you want to do is get a responsible individual who gives his name or her name and says.
Well, he did give it. I just didn't write it down.
No, that doesn't matter. You need to have it. That's right. Someone
else. And I can actually get that again.
That's just my suggestion.
But part of my request as well to them is that they make some sort of public statement, you know, either at one of these meetings that they seem to have police presence at, like the Westside Neighbors anti-RV meeting, that they either make some sort of public announcement that vigilantism isn't okay. I mean, I'm concerned, and I told him, you know, I don't want to end up having pepper spraying or, you know, tasing someone in the middle of the middle of the night because I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they're, you know, trying to tape a note or if they have a gun or a knife. It's just not safe to have people creeping around at night. This is considered my home. I don't creep around their homes at night. I don't feel like it's okay for them to do that. And so I'm requested, because I do feel unsafe with people doing that, for them to make some sort of, at city council, at one of these meetings, public statement that vigilantism is not supported by the police department here. And what things are okay and not okay to do if you feel like, you know, there's something that you need to handle in your neighborhood. You know, call the police is what I say. If you actually see a crime, call the police, but don't make false police reports. And don't go out vigilante as doing vigilantism and harassing people. These things are not safe to do. You know, wait till you see a crime like a normal person and report that crime to the police. That is how we're supposed to live in a civilized fashion.
Well, again, my advice to anyone listening who is in this situation, yourself included, is, as I said before, carefully get any and all information you can of the individual who is on the phone. It's not legal to audio the person on the phone without warning them that you're doing so, and I think it's supplying some kind of a beep. On the other hand, if you make a recording for personal use and you do so through a speakerphone conversation, as I understand some people do, though that may be technically illegal, it is, you know, often they have told me useful to have, because if you want to actually give an accurate rendering of what a police officer has told you, the police department is recording you, so there seems to be, it would seem to be only fair and appropriate for you to do the same, but not to announce you're doing so necessarily.
Well, I mean, if you can only use it if you announce it. I mean, I have no problem saying, by the way, I'm recording this conversation too, and I have to, if I have to go beep, beep, I don't mind doing that.
But I would check the law on this, because the law is very strange. So the important thing is to get an accurate rendering of what, you know, what is being said. It doesn't even necessarily mean you have to be able to present it in court or anything, but you at least have a clear, you can give a transcript of what the person said. And then you know, if they've recorded it, of course, they may lose the recording somewhere along the way. That
yeah, they may. You never know. You
never can tell.
I spent the evening actually at Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates on Facebook posting all of the previous history of YouTube videos of the Santa Cruz police at their best behavior, haha, being very sarcastic here, doing all kinds of horrible things, from racial remarks, racial profiling, to telling homeless people they have to go out and sleep in the rain, all kinds of things. So if you want to see, you know, the history.
Is it still up, or has Facebook removed that?
Oh, no, they're all there. They're all the YouTube videos that I could find about Santa Cruz police officers behaving badly.
And are they mirrored on another website in case Facebook does remove them?
Well, they're on YouTube, but you would have to go to YouTube and do all the search, you know, and go through a bunch of videos to actually find them yourself and view them. So what I did was I just obviously hashed through that in advance and just plucked the ones that are relevant out and posted them.
Santa Cruz specific videos.
Right.
And how can people find these?
Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates / Santa Cruz Homeless Union.
Fair enough. Anything you want to add as we enter the first evening of the famous pushback park-in?
No, that's it. Just come on down and join us for our peaceful protests.
And as I leave you here alone in the darkness, I will ponder that as I head for my warm, cozy little bed.
Good. I'm going to eat some cake.
Do it. We've been talking with
Alicia Cool, Messy Bun, Alicia Cool.
Barracuda Mama?
Barracuda Mom.
Thank you, babe.
It's called Lottie Dottie by Slick Rick. The album's Live 85.
Okay, party people in the house. You're about to witness something you've never witnessed before. Yes, it's the original human beatbox, Dougie Fresh, and his partner, the Grand Wizard, MC Ricky D. D, and that's me in the place to be. And we're going to show you how we do it for 85 Kick It Live, all right? Because I got a funny feeling you're all sick of all these crab rappers biting their rhymes because I'm their backstabbers. But when it comes to me and my friend Doug Fresh here, there is no competition because we are the best, yeah. Finesse and press, which we prove. And y'all will realize that we are the move. So listen close so you all don't miss as we go a little something like this. Hit it! Oh, yeah. You know what? La-di-da-di. Lottie, Lottie. 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 You know what? Yo, peep this. Lottie, Lottie. We like to party. We don't cause trouble. We don't bother nobody. We're just the men that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic. What? For all of y'all, keeping y'all in health. Just to see you smile and enjoy yourself. Cause it's cool when you cause a cozy condition, Anna, that we create. Cause that's our mission. So listen to what we say. Because this type of shit, it happens every day. I woke up around 10 o'clock in the morning. I gave myself a stretcher. A morning yawning. Went to the bathroom to wash up. Had some soap on my face and my hands upon a cup. I said, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who is the top choice of them all? There was a rumble dumble. 5 minutes it lasted. The mirror said,
you are you conceited bastard.
Well, that's true. That's why we never have no beef. So then I washed off the soap and brushed the gold teeth. You saw I love Olay because my skin gets pale. And then I got the files for my fingernails. Due to the night and on my behalf, I put the bubbles in the tub so I could have a bubble bath. Clean, dry was my body and hair. I threw on my brand new Gucci underwear. For all the girls I might take home, I got the Johnson's baby powder and the Polo cologne. Fresh dress like a million bucks. Threw on the balcony. Sally shoes and the fly green socks. Stepped out my house, stopped short. Oh no, I went back in, I forgot my Kango. And then I dilly,
Sally.
I ran through her,
Sally.
I bumped into my old girl,
Sally.
From the
Sally.
This is a girl plays hard to get. So I said, what's wrong? Cause she looked upset. She said, it's all because of you. I'm feeling sad.